Hello, Wimp here. Just a very quick note ahead of this episode. Just after the recording finished, we read the very sad news of the passing of Reading Football Club fan Jamie Goulding at just 28 years of age after losing a battle with bowel cancer. It goes without saying that all of our condolences here at the Tylerson End podcast and from the tylersonend.com go out to Jamie's family and friends. To lose anyone is a tragedy. To lose someone at such a young age is even more so. A very loyal rule. You can go and read the full story on the Reading FC website, readingfc.co.uk. But again, just a horrible tragedy. And again, our thoughts and prayers go out to Jamie's family and friends. But with that in mind, as I said, here is the rest of the show recorded just before we read that news.
The Tylehurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
After weeks of positivity, it's the first little wobble in the Yapstam era as Reading end this international section with a defeat at Brentford for a last-gasp draw against Derby. We'll ask whether the team have found their level or whether there's still more to come. We'll tackle the tricky issue of Jan Kermigan up front as he continues to divide Reading fans, and lots more to come right here on the Tylehurst End Podcast, episode number 103. Hello, thank you very much once again for joining us, for hitting that download button. However you're listening to us, thank you very much indeed. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of the tylerstend.com. And on this week's show, we've gone for an unchanged lineup. So I'm joined by Mr. Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Good afternoon.
And Mr. Dave Hambags-Harris. Dave, hello.
Good evening. Good day.
It is, we kept, like to keep a bit of continuity. Same three-man group. So,
don't change a winning side. Absolutely. And by all accounts, we are winning. By our accounts, we're winning.
Well, we've somehow made it to 103 without getting taken off the air, so you've got to keep that momentum going. As I said, a difficult week, chaps. Not the greatest. We know we've had lots of highs under Stam so far, but this, the first real sort of mini low that we've had, other than, I suppose you could say, that defeat at Newcastle and Wolves. But how are you generally feeling about the team heading into this break?
I'm fine about it. Every club goes through these little runs where their form isn't. I just think there's an element of being sussed out. Absolutely there is. But having said that, particularly against Brentford aside, Brentford was pretty much a defensive omni shambles. But almost every other game we've been fairly solid defensively, not really given much away. The only thing that really grinds my gears at the moment is the attack. But if we can get that sorted, I think we'll be okay. I mean, we're not the best team. We're not amongst the best teams in the division by any stretch of the imagination. And this is just a case of reality setting in.
Johnny?
Yeah, I'd agree with that in terms of reality setting in. I mean, I've said for the last couple of weeks, I felt a few of the wins we got on our unbeaten run, it would be very easy for them have been turned into draws or losses. And I feel like this is just things balancing out over the course of the season. Again, at Brentford, it finished 4-1, but had some shots gone in, or had we not hit the post, or had luck been on our side, it could easily have been a draw or a win there. And again, against Derby, it was a bit of a nothing game for 70 minutes. They were the first ones to break the deadlock, arguably, luckily. And, we have to recover and get a draw. So I think it's just things balancing out over the course of a season. We're not going to go on a 46-game unbeaten run, but equally, you're not concerned after these few results because they've shown fight and they've shown that they're still in games.
Yeah, we're going to tackle both of those games in much more detail to come in the recap. As mentioned, we've also got plenty of issues coming up in the mailbag. Thank you very much to everyone who has submitted their questions in this week. We've also got the results of the Tylehurst End Player of the Month, and we've got some updated news on the ticket situation for Reading's EFL Cup tie at Arsenal. So all that to come in this show. But just before we delve into that recap, again, a big thank you to everyone who has joined the crowdfunding campaign so far. It really does warm the heart to know that the people are out there and prepared to put their money where their mouth is and support the show. So thank you very much indeed to everyone who has joined in. If you haven't yet, you've got a couple of quid and you think, I like what these lads do. Let's give them a couple of quid, a little tip in the tip jar. Just head over to thetylehurstend.com. It's all the details are in the link and in the page that relates to this very show. So if you see the 103 episode, go there, click on the link and stick a couple of quid in the tip jar, and that'd be very much appreciated. But regardless, of how you support the show. Thanks very much for joining us. And without further ado, let's tackle those two games against Brentford and against Derby.
View from the Tarhurst end. Recapping this week's Championship action.
Okay, guys, so Brentford 4, Reading 1, and then Reading 1, Derby 1. Not the greatest of weeks for Yapstan. The first real sort of wobble he's had since those initial early days, and as mentioned, that defeat at St James's Park and at Molineux. We talked in the intro just about how you're generally feeling, but breaking it down in sort of more specifically about this week itself, how happy have you been with the two performances and the performance of the manager, Yapstan? Dave, I'll start with you.
You can't be happy with a 4-1 defeat. Brutally honest, I wasn't there, but I have seen some highlights. I have garnered opinion from various sources, including the Brentford side. And long and short of it is that those who have watched Reading for the majority of the season are of the opinion that it could easily have gone the other way in many ways, because Reading, on another day, could have scored 4 or 5 themselves. Hit the post twice, off the line, penalty. Great save from the Brentford keeper at just after half-time. But at the same time, you know, having seen the highlights, the defending is an absolute shambles. I mean, for the second goal, Acevedo just strolls past Vandenberg and taps home. For the fourth goal, McShane and Moore leave the Brentford striker, whose name escapes me, completely alone on the edge of the area with the fullbacks dropped. And there's only ever going to be one outcome. Derby, the problem with Derby was the intensity for me. It wasn't a great performance, but then Derby were no great shakes either, considering, you know, you'd expect them, all right, their league position is where they are, they're towards the bottom, but they're not playing well, and they didn't play well on Saturday. A draw was a fair result, make no mistake, but there were very few chances in the game. Reading's attendance, intensity was pretty poor. But it's just literally a case of reality setting in. I mean, I've said it 2 or 3 times already now, and it's one of those things that happens in football. It's up to the team to pull themselves out, up to the management team to do something slightly different or do something to tweak it, just so that we can start creating chances on a regular basis and go from there.
One of the big things, Johnny, that a lot of people have pointed the finger at, and we discussed this on the podcast extra with Charles on Friday, did Stam get his team right for Brentford? Would you have liked to have seen more rotation? You know, the benefit of hindsight is one thing, but going into the game, if you'd seen 4 or 5 changes from Stam after that win over Huddersfield, would you have been, well, I don't understand why he's changed the winning team, or would you have been like, that's the right move?
Well, like you say, it's easy to say afterwards. I mean, I think I was a bit surprised that someone like Stephen Quinn didn't get a start, because every time he's come on, he's looked very lively. And in fact, I think he's actually one of our top performers in terms of player ratings, because whenever he comes on, he just gives that team the little bit of a lift that it needs, I feel.
And I think on Quinn, I would have much rather have seen him in there than someone like George Evans, because Quinn is much better suited to playing against a team like Brentford, who aren't exactly what you call physical, but they're very mobile, very swift, very, very incisive passing team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Joey Vandenberg came back in against Huddersfield, got about 50-odd minutes, then was taken off. Played at Griffin Park, only managed to make the break before getting taken off. Again, chatted about this with Charles. He seemed to think this was more of a tactical move, but he didn't play on Saturday against Derby, ill by all accounts. Has the magic worn off a little bit with Joey, or is this just a case of he's just not fully up to speed? Because I don't think he's been terrific since he's come back.
Well, I think in the minutes that he's been on the pitch, he's shown what he can do. But the problem with him is, and this is something that's blighted him throughout his whole career, he's very much a bit of a 50-50 player. He's going to make some tackles that are absolutely fantastic and going to get you on your feet and you'll be applauding them. But then he'll miss time one and he's on a yellow. And then you know that straight away, for the rest of the game, he's very much in deep water. That is the problem with a player like him. I mean, he's always going to pick up cards and he's always going to be playing on the edge. And it's just, I mean, it's one of those situations where Yapstan has assessed it and gone, well, the referee, you know, has got his number, if you like. He's very close to the edge and, you know, you'd rather have 11 men on the field than 10, obviously.
Yeah, and you have to say, talking about the defence as well and the whole defensive unit, Jordan Obita, Dave, I didn't think he had a fantastic game at Griffin Park. You look at some of the goals and you do question his positioning. How much do they miss Tyler Blackett? Or do they miss him at all?
Well, in truth, since Tyler Blackett's been here, I've been more impressed with Jordan Obita than Blackett. I think Obita's upped his game significantly. But having said that, like you say, against Brentford, he went missing a couple of times. Certainly for the third goal, you question exactly where it was positioning. All right, it's the Brentford right back that scores, and there is cover chasing back, but Obita's pretty much in the D, and you're wondering, what's he doing there? Why is he, you know, why is he not further out wide, letting the central midfielder or central defence sort that out? I'm not over it. Not, you know, it's very easy in these situations to isolate one player, and I don't like doing it in one specific game. You know, if it's a continual sequence of events and the same mistakes and same problems over and over again, then fine, you can start highlighting it. But in a one-off game against Brentford, Obita wasn't good. We know that. Was he a weak link? I don't believe he is.
So there's nothing to come out of that defeat where you're going, where you're thinking, in my head, I've been worried about this for X number of games and it happened again.
Not so much it happened again. I didn't allude to it last week. I was actually fairly positive last week. And that's not saying I'm negative now. I'm being more realistic.
He's flipped the switch, people. He's hulking up.
He's turned. He's turned.
You won't like Dave when he's angry.
I was worried about Brentford simply because of the sort of team they are. And the personnel that we've got, the style of play that we've got. And I just know that Brentford, as I said earlier, they're a quick, they're an incisive side. And you look at the first goal and the movement, the passing field, the little triangle and the run onto it. And he took out three players in doing that. And the little pass in field and a quick turn and a pass to the left again where there's a man in space and it's a quick movement. And I don't see Reading doing that. And that's not to say that we're expecting us to play that kind of way. It would be nice to play with that level of intensity. But a team like that that are on it and are at it 100% all the time, I think we're always going to look and, you know, going to struggle. And let's not forget, this lot put five past Preston. And Preston aren't a great side.
No.
But they're solid defensively.
They've just beaten Villa. They only conceded one to us. Grayson's got them fairly organised.
Exactly, they're a well organised side.
You've got to say with Brentford, I mean, I think they finished ninth last season and sixth the season before, so they're not a bad team by any standards at all. No. They're a very good team with a very good manager in Dean Smith, who I think is probably going to be strongly considered for the Aston Villa job in terms of what he's done over the last few months and further along. I mean, they're a good team and they play a very good brand of football and they've got a lot of things going right there. And you've got to forget, ultimately, Reading have a rookie manager, 11 new players, they're building something. And, like, you know, like I said, you're going to get results like this. And Brentford, as we said before, very strong at home. I think they'd won three of their four games. They'd scored 15 goals or so. So it was a poor result on the face of it, but it was by no means disastrous.
No. Precisely.
I 100% agree. You see a score like this, and it just happens. It just happens when you're not a fantastic team like Reading are. Even fantastic teams, they're going to give a hiding to a really good team at some point this season, Brentford. You know, if you lose your away games to top 10 sides, it's not critical. That's just what they are. Those are the games you sort of chalk off and you go, well, we'll probably get beat there, and anything we get is a bonus. If you are losing away at places like Rotherham, Blackburn, then you start thinking, okay, you see a 4-1 away at Rotherham, for example, and then you go, okay, well, there's something wrong here. Whereas you can much more place this on, Brentford were good, they just had the edge, and they were clinical. And we'll come on to this in the mailbag and in the recap for the Derby game as well. They've got strikers just on form, like Hogan, Lasaviva. You know, these are strikers that you look at their attacking options compared to Reading, I know which one I'm taking. You've got a guy that scored 14 in his last 14. You're talking about a Reading lineup. You haven't scored 14 goals between them. So it's just one of those things. It's one of those games. And, you know, they came back, tail between the legs. Stam sort of hinted at that, not that it was a good game to lose, but if you're going to lose a game, this is the sort of circumstances to do it in.
Well, I think it was a bit of a reality check. And I mean, I'm not saying that people were getting carried away, but when you go on an 8-game unbeaten run, you do start to dream or believe. And I know that certainly the three of us were, I wouldn't say pessimistic, but perhaps more, you know, more realistic, more feet on the ground, more, you know, we want to see more from this before it actually goes like that. And so, you know, to get a result like that, a defeat like that, it focuses you and it makes you realise, yes, we can, you know, eke out the odd result, but ultimately this is still a work in progress.
That's what we said also on the back of that, that the Sky Sports presenter there that night, and again, her name escapes me, West Ham fan, can't think of her name.
Bianca Westwood.
Bianca Westwood. She was right into the game, really, really enjoying it. And said that even at 2-0, Reading were in the game because we were creating chances. We looked incisive. We looked like we could score at any point in time. But then so could Brentford. So it just happened to be one of those games that was very open, which isn't really the way that we've played this season. But Brentford made it an open game as the home side. You expect them to be on the front foot. And like I said, it's been mentioned plenty of times, they were clinical. They scored 4 goals. Poor defending in many ways, but also exploited expertly by a good side. Let's not ignore the fact that Brentford are a good side. Forget budgets and stuff like that. They've got good players. They've got technically sound players, players who can change a game.
And as well, they've got that edge of... They've got the Griffin Park factor as well. It's a small stadium. Mm-hmm. They know it very well. They've got the fans right on top of them. They've still got that... I'm not being offensive to Brentford, but they've still got that small club, we're battling against it mentality, which serves you well, I think, at this level, because it really does sort of rally you behind it, and every game still feels big. I know we spoke to Billy before the game, Billy the Bee from Besotted, and he was sort of saying, yeah, we sort of think we belong at this level. There's still that real desire to let's go and give this, you know, these boys from down the road a hiding. So that really suits them well. And credit to them, I said that they'll be in the mix come the end of the season. If we had said at the start of the season, out of the two games this week, which would be the tougher, I think most people would probably have said Derby. Looking at the way they recruited in the summer, I think we talked about it, didn't we, in the pre-season show when we looked at some of the squads and the transfer business. We all sort of looked at Derby and went, well, looking at that squad, they're going to be right up there. They had a nightmare start. They had an absolute nightmare. In the time between recording our last show and the game, Nigel Pearson has seemingly lost his job. Is he officially gone yet? I've been out of the loop today.
Still suspended.
Suspended for a bust-up with Mel Morris, their chairman slash owner. Chris Powell took over, led them to a 2-0 win at Cardiff. The first time they'd scored more than one goal in a game. And a game that saw a certain Nick Blackman, finally, after I think 269 days, score his first goal for Derby. His first goal in any English football for 269 days. And so they came to the Medeski on a little bit of a bounce. And sure enough, it looked... for 90 minutes, as if they were going to take a 1-0 win, because who other than not Nick Blackman, but Matty Vidra pops up, gets them into the lead.
They were already ahead for 30 minutes.
Well, you know.
It was less than that. Well, I forgot they thought they scored around the 70th minute.
No, 60th minute.
Okay. Well, then up until the 90th minute then, you thought they were going to take all 3 points. You could hear the murmurings growing, but George Evans pops up, grabs Reading a point, and they go into the international break on a bit of a positive. So how did you two see this game? Because I saw both ends of the argument, both sides of the ends of the spectrum, as it were. I saw people saying, oh, well, we should have beaten Derby. They're still struggling. They're in, you know, they're a shambles of a club. Why aren't we getting 3 points? And I saw other people saying it's a great point to get. Good attitude. Let's rebuild after the international break. Where did both of you fall?
I think in Derby were there to... If you're going to play Derby at any time, then perhaps this would probably be the best time to play them, because they were in that little bit of turmoil. And okay, one positive result against Cardiff doesn't necessarily change your season, but they were still very vulnerable. And I mean, you could see that for 60 minutes or so, nothing really happened. But that was because we were very slow and methodical in moving the ball around. But equally, Derby... were trying to hit us on the break, but nothing was really coming off for them. I mean, they did grab the goal in the end, and you know, Matty Vidra, I mean, he didn't celebrate, fair play to him. Felt a little bit sorry for the reaction he got from the East Stand when he was substituted off for Nick Blackman. But there was really nothing in the game. And I mean literally nothing, because nothing happened for 60 minutes or so. And like we were saying at the Brentford game, it seems to take Reading going to behind for them to open up the game. And it's obviously something that Yapstan wants to do. He's very happy with, let's keep the game contained, let's make sure it doesn't get too out of hand, and maybe we can nick a 1-0 win. But as soon as we went 1-0 down, and it was the same at Brentford, suddenly the entire game opens up. You've got both teams streaming forward, attacking. And, you know, it really is sort of balls to the wall sort of thing, just absolutely flying forward, and they're flying forward as well. And, I mean, we talk about, like, the patient build-up and the patient possession style of play, and as soon as we went 1-0 down, the crowd turned, and it's understandable. Because you then at that point there is more of an urgency to get the ball forward and to make things happen. And
but know, why does it take? Why do you think it takes that long? Is this a mental thing? Is it something changing the opposition?
I mean, you're happy when, well, I wouldn't say you're happy, but you're content if you're controlling the game. You think, okay, well, you know, we're eventually going to get the goal and eventually going to make the breakthrough. If you're controlling the game and you don't look any trouble conceding, then you're more content. But when you go 1-0 down, there, you know, there is that urgency that suddenly comes into the game, and ultimately, I think it was that urgency that got us the win.
But why can't Reading do that from the start? Why can't they have that urgency when they get on the pitch to think, right, we're going to go for this and we're going to get in the lead? Do you just think this is something that Stam is coaching them, that deliberately to be maybe a little bit more on the reserve side?
I think it's exactly that, and that's the reason why we don't go gung-ho from the start. If you know something that I've noticed from the start of games throughout the whole season is that we're very slow to start, very slow to get into games. Sides tend to have, Derby aside, tend to have, you know, at least one fairly decent opportunity or good move and open us up in the first 5 or 10 minutes. You know, we play ourselves into games. It's very methodical, as Johnny said, very methodical way of playing. But in order to do that, you've still got to be playing with intensity. And even if you are playing yourself into a game, you've still got to have that intensity. And there wasn't any of it until, as far as I'm concerned, at least Joseph Mendes came on. And when we went 3-5-2. So I think it's something that, yeah, Stam has drilled into the players, but we need to be on it from the start. Even if we are going to be doing that, and we're not.
The focal point of a lot of fans' ire, Johnny, was unfortunately Jan Kermigan, who's been a very divisive figure pretty much since he arrived at the Medeski Stadium back in January. He didn't do very well. He got a 4.5 player ratings from Hugh, who was at the game and did them for us. You can go check them out on thetalesden.com and see why he gave him that 4 out of 10. But you look at his whole season now, his average across our player ratings, which is done by numerous people, each of us have done one this season, it's 5.5 out of 10. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with the player ratings, if you're getting a 6, it means you've done a pretty good, solid job. You know, you've made an impact on the game. Not great, but you know, you've done really well. And a 5 is, okay, you probably could have done a little bit more. You've had a little bit of an off day, but you've not let anyone down. And a 4 is just plain outright, you've had a bad game.
Yeah.
So he's averaging 5.5, somewhere between that meh to all right level, that very scientific scale there.
Yeah.
Does he deserve that 5.5? Or are we being, over the whole season, overly harsh? Or is that maybe even too high?
Well, I think in terms of Saturday's performance, I didn't think Jan Kermigan was very good. And I know that there is the whole argument about he works so hard for the team and does so much defensively, but strikers are paid to score goals, and certainly in the system that he's in, he's paid to create opportunities for others. And for whatever reason, it just didn't come off for him on Saturday. He had a free header from a corner that was straight at Scott Carson. You know, you'd been hoping for him to put it into either corner and certainly make the keeper work harder. And there were a couple of times when he tried some neat flicks and some nice through balls, and he just wasn't on the same wavelength as the rest of the team. So yeah, I mean, he works hard, he works his socks off, and he's very intelligent, but for whatever reason, it just isn't happening for him at the moment, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that's fairly right. The bare minimum that you expect from a player is putting in 100% effort, let's face it.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, if you're giving players marks for effort, then you know, he'd be towards the top end of the scale. But by his own admission, I think he's a victim of the formation. It's not a style of play that he's, well, not a formation that he's ever really played to any great extent in his career. He's used to having someone off his shoulder, you know, playing up front with someone who can support him. And at the moment, and as I've said before, he's not got anybody in and around him, and all the little flicks that he's used to playing, they're not coming off simply because he hasn't got either side a player around him. So you've got Gareth McCleary on one side who's hugging the touchline. Roy Bearon's on the other who's hugging the touchline. And it's up to Kermigan to hold the ball up and bring him or bring those two players or John Swift or another midfielder into play. And he's not doing it. He's simply not doing it.
So has the time then come, Johnny, I'll start with you, to try someone else there? I know the argument's been made, and we've made it, and it's one I do understand and agree with to a large extent, of he's the best option we've got. But has it come to the stage where he's, because he's contributing realistically so little in front of goal, Is it not time for Yapstam to give either a Mendes or a Dom Samuel, or even go completely left field like someone else? Is it the time to make the change now they've got this 2-week break, or do you just persist with Jan until at least January?
Well, I mean, Mendes, the impact he had when he came on, you know, he changed the game. He was really the key substitution. So you know that he can, or certainly that in that cameo, he made that sort of impact. But, I mean, the same argument is, would he make the same impact if he started the game? You know, because against tiring legs, against the tiring defences, you know, had a lot to do for 70, 80 minutes, he was really effective. So I'm not sure whether it's the time to change things, because, like I said, I think Jan Koeman, he's just a little bit unlucky at the moment. And I'm sure that when things click and when he, you know, when the team starts to play around him and, you know, get to know him and become more comfortable, then it could go right for him. So I wouldn't change things just now. Dave?
There's an argument that you can change it, but with the complete lack of options, what do you do? And as Johnny said, you know, Joseph Mendes had an effect in his 10-minute cameo when we were pushing forward. But would he, as you say, would he have the same effect starting a game? And we've seen it so often with players who come off the bench and either score or have a really positive effect on a game, and they then start and they're totally anonymous. There's only one way to find out, and that's to change it. But at the same time, if you've only lost one game in 10, why change it?
Well, I sympathise, but I do just sort of get to the point and think, has he got any... I just think Kermit's got so little credit at the moment that I just think if you are going to make a change and try something new, now is the time to do it. I think what's the harm in seeing what a Dom Samuel can do put in that position?
But I mean, Yapstam sees Dom Samuel every day in training.
And that is the counter-argument. But I'm still saying that why...
I mean, it's like I see some people, you know, Chris Gunter had quite a poor game on Saturday, and people are saying, oh, we've got Tenai Watson, who's even better than him, sitting on the bench. Or, and it's like, really? Is he really? Yapstam, again, sees this guy every day in training, a 19-year-old who, you know...
Yeah, I find it very difficult to find a 19-year-old that's played, what, how many games has he played for us?
Exactly.
Four appearances. He's played really well, but... At the same time, is he an option?
Is he the same
first team option that you can start 10, 15, 20 games in a row?
Against a 28-year-old with over 100 caps for Wales who got to the semi-finals of Euro 2016. I mean,
so I think the bottom line, and again, the question is...
You've got to trust your manager.
Yeah. And so for you, both of you, you just stick with it. You stick with him after the international break and hope he sort of adapts or comes into a bit of form.
Well, I think Stam's got to work with him, try and get him to bring others into the game and adapt to the actual style of play and the formation better. Because at the moment, nothing's coming off, really. So you got to work with him. He's the best we've got. We've got two strikers injured at the moment. I think the ideal replacement is Yaku Maita, if you're going to have a replacement come up, because you know, he's big and he's strong, he's burly. He can play that lone striker role. I tell you, the player that we could really cry out for is funnily enough is a player who scored against us for Brentford, is Scott Hogan, because he's exactly the sort of player. You know, if we had Shane Long right now, he'd be brilliant in that.
Yeah, we had this exact
big,
same discussion last
strong,
week, didn't we?
Quick, mobile, great in the air, brings others into play, and intelligent.
Yeah, and the owners recognise this. Tiger, in comments to Charles Watts at the team photograph, again, brought up on the podcast, actually says they're looking for a striker. They're just not going to rush into it. They had targets in the summer and they all sort of fell through. So I can't believe for a single second that anybody sees whether inside, and Jan himself probably knows he's not the answer. But he's a good option. And I do like him as a player off the pitch as well. Seems like a great bloke. And this isn't a system designed suit. I mean, he's 34. The old phrase, you know, can't teach an old dog new tricks. He's not suddenly going to be able to be fantastic in this position. There's a reason he's at Reading Football Club in the first place. So I suppose you do.
You're calling an old dog. I'm 34 as well.
Now, there's still time for you then, Dave.
Absolutely. Come on, Sam.
Get yourself in the mix.
Absolutely.
But, you know, there is still a little part of me that just thinks, just give him a chance. Because sometimes... I know you can say that, oh, well, Stam sees him in training all the time, but sometimes you just think, give someone a go and give them that boost, saying, you know what, show me what you can do. People have been saying, you know what, and give it a go. And then if they fail in 45, 60 minutes, debates pretty much answered.
But then it's the same the other way. I mean, if Jan Kermagant now gets dropped, what's he going to feel? You know, is he going to... Well, okay, the manager's got no faith.
That's what I said, he's got no credit, though. He's got no credit to the point where he can say... I don't think he's at the point where he's saying, well, I've done X, Y, and Z. How have you dropped me?
Mm. Well, he's been doing everything that's been asked of him.
No, but he hasn't, because he hasn't been scoring goals. He hasn't been creating a lot of chances. All he has been doing brilliantly, and I'll give him a lot of credit for it, is defending very well. But he's on there as a central striker to bring others into play and to create goals. And the only goals Reading are creating are when people bring people down in the penalty area.
And that's also a big question, is what exactly has he been asked to do by Yapstam? Because we don't know.
Very fair. Switching the attention away from Kermigan then, we'll probably come back to him in the mailbag, but Roy Behrens as well has very sort of quietly gone off the boil. If you look at his performances, and again, his player ratings in the past few weeks, they've been just very slowly dwindling down. I know he got the winner against Huddersfield, but are you still happy with what Behrens has given you, or are you a little bit underwhelmed after what was a really impressive start?
I'm frustrated with him. I like watching him. I like watching him play. I think his movement is excellent. I think his first touch and his technical ability is really good. He looks really quick across the ground, but actually isn't lightning quick. And he'll struggle to outpace most fullbacks. Not that saying that he won't be able to hold his own. Doesn't like a physical battle. But then, you know, he's a small 5'6" gym slip of a player.
Did you think it was a penalty on Saturday?
No.
When Behrens is pushed over? I thought it was.
I've seen the replay, and I think he's gone down very easily.
I thought it was a bit more than a gentle lean.
I've seen worse given, but...
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, from my vantage point, I thought...
Get the ref's opinion here, Dave.
I mean, he was leaning on him, but I thought it was a bit more than, you know, a bit more than a sort of gently shuffle you off the ball. I think it was a bit more of a... I've not seen the replay, but I thought it was more of a sort of shove you down and then say you dived sort of thing.
I don't know. Like you say, you've seen him given, you've seen him not given very often. It's all intents and purposes. It's down to the referee and what he and the angle that he's got and exactly what he sees. But with him, from the start, there's been a question mark over his final ball. I think it's been questionable at best. But he does work himself into good situations to be able to deliver that. And he's got the ability to gain that yard. But True to form with Dutch players, if you watch Dutch football, and I do watch a reasonable amount of it, when they get that yard, they don't always look to cross the ball and lump it in there. You know, Behrens, he's a right-footed player playing on the left-hand side, and he'll very, very often cut inside to the corner of the area and loft it in from there. But having said that, another point that I've wanted to make is... there's a little bit of misfortune in terms of the wide players and their delivery, that when they do get it right, at the start of the season, we were getting players into the box. You know, we were getting 3 and 4 players into the box attacking the ball, and I'm not seeing that at the moment. All too often on Saturday, you had Jordan Obita getting into the right area, Behrens, McCleary once got into the right area and had nobody to cross to, or just Jan Kermagant with nobody bombing in. And that's an issue, I think, with the midfield. John Swift wasn't quite there up with the pace of the game, I didn't think. George Evans isn't the sort of player to go bombing in all the time. I'm struggling to see where the attacking intent is at the moment.
Do you think that's, again, is that something that's been coached? Is it, or do you think it's maybe just a little bit of a fitness issue, that they're not quite as sharp and springy as they were in August?
I don't think it's anything down to fitness. I think it's personnel not in the right frame of mind. That's not really the
mentality,
it comes down to instinct at the end of the day. Now, John Swift, as we all know, is an attacking midfielder, but he's not a late running midfielder. George Evans hasn't shown that ability so far to be a late running midfielder to attack. We're looking at someone like, you know, the king of it all was Frank Lampard.
Yeah.
The late, you know, get in there, penalty spot, within the penalty spot in a 6-yard area, a meet across or a ball into the middle. We haven't had a player as good as that doing that since Gilfie.
Yeah.
And the amount of goals that we scored with Gilfie Sigurdsson running in, you know, onto the penalty spot.
Sid has used to seem to get those goals as well.
He was very good as well, exactly. And Andy Hughes was also quite good at it in League One and for a season, Championship or Division One, as it was called back then. But we don't have that at the moment. Danny Williams had some success with it last season. He scored 6 goals. But when you've got players who aren't of that mentality, of that instinct, you're going to struggle. And we don't have any players that really do that. I don't see John Swift as being that kind of player, even though he's an attacking midfielder. And he's the perfect player to be able to do it, playing just behind Kermigan. Kermigan's always on occupying a defender. And I'd back him in 7 out of 10 headed duels with most central defenders. But doesn't ever seem to be anywhere near the ball. When he does start winning those headers, he has productive games and he gets higher marks. Forest last season, he should have scored 2 or 3 goals. Brighton could have scored 2 or 3 goals. But it's the support. The support to the wide players, the supply players. You know, Gareth McCleary. And when you've got the ball on one side, with the formation that we play, and even in a 4-4-2, you need the wide player to be attacking the back post. At least occupy the fullback.
And that's what Brentford's players were doing.
We're not doing that at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the attacking, we've been saying it all season, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I think we all know that the unit isn't functioning as well as it could do, or it needs upgrading. I don't think that's a shock factor. But let's be on the positive side. The defence bounced back well after conceding 4 at Griffin Park. Regardless of what you want to say about Derby, their form, they've still got some very good attacking players in that unit. Regardless of what you think of players, you know, Vidra from last season, they've got players like Will Hughes. And I thought, from watching it back, Reading's defence did a really good job at keeping them out of danger zones. Conceded from a set piece again. Don't want to be a broken record. We know that's an issue. But the defence...
I thought that was actually rather unlucky. It took a deflection off the wall and Vidra just stuck a foot out, didn't he?
But how the defence continues to impress, Johnny. Are you, again, sort of going back to that Brentford game, are you confident that was more of a blip than anything to worry about with that unit?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's like I said, and I think we've seen it in many recent games. When Reading open up the game, they open it up a bit too much. And I think we saw it at Brentford, and we certainly saw it at home against Huddersfield as well. By the end, that was a real end-to-end game. And we had a few chances at home against Huddersfield, but we certainly conceded a few chances as well. Like I said, Yapstam and this Reading team can control a game perfectly. But when they go behind, I think it gets a little bit reckless. And I think that the defence... Perhaps, I don't know whether it's the back four or perhaps they just don't get enough cover from elsewhere. But, I mean, in terms of when the game is 0-0 or when, you know, when we're happy controlling the game, you've got to be impressed. I mean, Liam Moore, you can see why Yapstam's chased him for so long because he looked absolutely class. I mean, he hadn't played since January and now he's come in and played 7 or 8 games in a row and he's not looked a second off the pace. He's been absolutely rock solid. I think the rest of the back four, I mean, Chris Gunter, you know what you're going to get with him, sort of 6 out of 10 every game, although I thought he was below par on Saturday. McShane, again, rock solid. And, I mean, Abita and Blackett, you're going to have this debate pretty much every game, aren't you? I mean, but I think you've got to give a lot of credit to the back four. Like I said, they can shut down games relatively effectively. It's just when we go behind that I'm worried. Or when the game opens up, that I'm worried.
I think there is an issue, particularly against Huddersfield. The issue for me was that the back four just dropped. They dropped between five and ten yards, and it just invited pressure. Credit to Huddersfield, they exploited that really well. And as I said last week, it came as no surprise that a lot of the good stuff from them came down our left hand side. But they're a good side. Created some more than presentable opportunities. But I think that a lot of that was simply because of the fact that our defence, either when we're leading or when the game opens up, they have this natural inclination to just drop back, invite pressure. And maybe it's a Yapstam thing. They've actually told them to do that and get the ball and try and hit the opposition on the break.
It is very nice, though, to have the foundations of a really good spine. I look at that back five and I go, I'm really happy with it. Yeah, okay, I might upgrade the goalkeeper and sometimes the left back's got a bit, you know, not ideal. But I look at that and I go, that is the foundation of a team that could win promotion.
I mentioned 04-05 last week and that season we had Hanneman, Sonko, Ingemarsson, Shorey and Murty as the regular back five. And I think we're seeing signs that we've got it close to right at the moment. I mean, yes, all right, people have questions over Jordan Obita, but he's an adequate fullback at this level. Tyler Blackett showing that he's an adequate fullback at this level. Chris Gunter, a more than adequate fullback at this level. I'm not a great fan, people know that, but he can at least, he's a competent player.
Yeah.
We've spoken about Liam Moore. Don't need to say any more at this moment in time.
Well, hey.
Pun not intended. Paul McShane, he's borderline bottom end, mid-table, premiership quality in a decent, solid side. So I'm happy with the back of the back line. But going forward is where the development is needed. That's where, again, the comparison comes in. And like it or not, there are always going to be comparisons with around that period of time. Steve Coppell got it so right for 2 years,
yeah.
2.5 years. And yeah, if we can, you know, if we can look to that and use that potentially, all right, Yapstam will have his own ideas, but if we can look to that and actually improve the side going forward, certainly in terms of creativity and attacking intent, as a, you know, we won't be going far wrong.
Yeah, and all of that means that we are now 8th in the Championship. We are 3 points worse off than this point last season when we all headed into the international break on that ridiculous high.
Going down, surely.
Pardon, sorry?
We're going down, surely.
Yeah, not too far. God help us if we have such a run that we did at this point last season. But as I said, they're doing well. They're hanging around. And all they've got to do, look, nobody should be getting carried away and thinking that this is a side that should be knocking on the door of the top six. But they're definitely not going to be knocking on the door of the bottom three. And if they can hang around, just keep in touch sort of within sort of 5-6 points of the playoff places, and they get their January recruitment right, get a little bit of luck, anything can happen. I'm not ruling out this team from making a playoff push. We said this last week and the week before. I don't think any of us are going to put money on it to happen. But I'm still, even after this week and the wobble they've had, still looking up rather than down.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, there we go. A nice positive note to end this section on. And with that in mind, we shall now move swiftly on to News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
I said we'd be moving swiftly on, Johnny. And John Swift was one of the men nominated for the Tarlhurst End podcast and Tarlhurst End website Player of the Month award. Did he win, though, Johnny?
Well, he won in August, but he didn't quite win in September. I think he took home the official vote, but our more seasoned readers voted for Liam Moore to take home his first award. I mean, like I said in the previous section, I think since he's come in, what he's done, he's just looked so unbelievably assured, not only at championship level, but in the system as well. You can see he's clearly one of these players who's been brought up as a centre-back to be comfortable with playing the ball and, you know, receiving the ball and moving it around. And yeah, he took 51%. I mean, John Swift got 37%, which was, again, a decent effort from him. And then Paul McShane and Stephen Quinn, the two Irish call-ups, were third and fourth with 9% and 4%, although Quinn is injured now. So
yeah, a worthy winner for you, Dave. What do you think John Swift should? Because John Swift took home the official club website Player of the Month.
He's had an instant impact. The defence looks a lot more secure with him in there rather than Joey Vandenberg. All respect to Joey. So he's, well, since he's arrived, I think we've only lost one game, haven't we? So it tells its own story.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I voted for him. I thought he had a fantastically consistent month. I think John Swift's candidacy was just hurt a little by the fact he was hurt a little at the start of the month, so couldn't really contribute in the first couple of games of the month. Fantastic performances at Barnsley and Brighton. And then I just think maybe, again, he's just drifted off out of the game a little bit. But again, we harken back to that comments we had from Billy the Bee at the start of the season, who watched him all last year for Brentford, and that's exactly what he said would happen. So,
well, I think the other thing is, now you've got tape on him, and you see that he is everything good about Reading. So you park someone on him and say, right, do something else. Mm. Yep. And at the moment, we haven't found that plan B, I don't think.
Yeah, and it makes a change because I seem to remember from years past that the same bloke tends to win it the first 2 or 3 months. And then did Nick Blackman win it about 2-3 times in a row at the start of last season?
I think he only sort of hit form in September, October, November, didn't he? Previous year was, I think the previous year was Danny Guthrie, took it home a few times, and Pavel Pogrebniak. So that's 13, 14 maybe. down in the Championship. I think last year there was. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll have to go.
Norwood. Norwood took home.
Oliver Norwood, yeah, you're right. We'll have to dig around the archives for that. But the only other news of note relates to the fourth round EFL Cup tie at the Emirates against Arsenal in October. As of today, the club have confirmed they've sold around 4,000 tickets. Their full and final allocation will be 5,306. So if you're listening to this and you thought, oh, well, I'll just give it a few days to buy my ticket. If you're in the criteria, go and get it tomorrow because you might well miss out. Dave, are you surprised that quite so many have taken the option and are going down to this game?
No, not at all. Arsenal, big club, £10. What better opportunity could you have to get to go and watch Reading at one of you know, aesthetically one of the best stadia in the country and at a more than reasonable price? You ain't going to get many opportunities.
Yeah, I've noticed a few people have been murmuring, saying, oh, Reading fans jumping on the bandwagon for the big games. Does
the same not happen to every club?
Yeah, we took 40,000 to Wembley. We don't even fit 40,000 in this Medeski Stadium. So, you know, what are you going to complain about? You always got to complain about something.
Indeed. Well, as I said, I can imagine those final 1,306 tickets will go. They are still on sale on a one per basis. One per person basis until 9 o'clock Wednesday morning. Then they'll be opened up to the rest of fans based on membership points and whatnot. So do you think they'll hit general sale? Or do you think they'll all go?
They'll all go.
Yeah. I just think you'll get people doing a bit of creative, my mate's got a season ticket sort of thing. Give me a ticket.
Yeah.
Well, pooling together.
I will not be going, so I won't be one of the, 12,000 season ticket holders do we have now?
Not sure, but something like that.
They never really release the full details, do they?
I think it's probably a bit less, maybe 9, 10.
I don't know, because they always count the season ticket holders. In some games, I can't imagine anybody's bought a match ticket for, and there's still been about 13,000 in the ground. So, anyway. If you do want to go to the Emirates for that game, act quickly, or else you will probably have to miss out. And a reminder, it's not going to be televised either. So, the only way you'll be able to see it is listening at home on the radio. Or, of course, following the Tyler Sens Twitter account, which is a more than adequate way to follow a game. Anyway, that wraps up News Bites. No pub chat this week, as we've sort of covered most of the subjects available to us. So, without further ado, we will delve into the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Thank you very much to everyone who's got in touch via at The Tarlhurst End on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com, and who has visited us on Facebook at facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End. I'm going to start this week's mailbag with Matt Castle, who says, Yapstan's philosophy provides the foundations on how to play, but it's the players making the passes, poor movement and poor decisions that stop us scoring more. With limited time training, it's going to be a slow process. But the important thing is that we've already seen progression. Have patience.
Yeah, although, I mean, players, you know, players are given freedom to do what they want in games. But ultimately, they play to a tactical style. And you can see it from game to game that to players play differently. So, you know, whilst I do think that it is true we don't have enough midfield movement at times, it's probably because they're being told to, you know, either go in between two players, look for a pass here, or, you know, stay in front of someone so you can turn them. Because, you know, I mean, they do so much analysis of players now that you know every player's strengths and weaknesses. So if you're being, if a team is playing a certain style, it's because they've been told to, not because they haven't got any better ideas.
Yeah, pretty much that. Having said that, and identify a player. As I said, I didn't like doing it earlier. George Evans, a couple of times, has been playing with Joey Vandenberg, or in the Joey Vandenberg role, I think we can call it. And I've just noticed a few times that when the ball's being passed across the back line, and he's very static in a 10-yard by 10-yard area just in front of the back line. And if the ball goes out to one of the flanks, and invariably you're going to get players from the opposition drifting across or heading across to try and, you know, put some form of pressure on that flank. And it just leaves space in the middle. And you're just looking at someone like George Evans to drop in. And if he doesn't receive the ball, then it's at least it creates space for another player to possibly exploit. And again, if it doesn't happen the second time, there's more space for another player to exploit. Little kind of domino effect. And I just find George Evans far too static.
Yeah, it's interesting you mention that point, because Alex has written in saying, do you guys agree that the main problem for us is being so static in midfield as well as lacking a goal scorer? So that's sort of along the same lines. Do you think it's a sort of a domino effect from the midfield maybe not quite doing enough?
I think there's an argument there, yeah. It all kind of blends together, because if the midfield's too static, then you're not going to be creating the space for players to play in, to be exploited, for attacks to be generated. If you're not going to have attacks that are going to be generated, you know, with the ruthlessness that's required at any level of football, then you're not going to be creating too many chances for the attack. If the attack aren't brought into the game often enough, they're going to look, certainly in our case, in our formation, they're going to look isolated. And as I said earlier, Jan Kermigan is a player who has regularly throughout his career played alongside another striker, and he's still learning the situation, learning the formation by his own admittance.
Yeah, Alex asked the question as well. George Evans or Joey Vandenberg, Johnny?
Well, Joey Vandenberg, as long as he can make 90 minutes on the pitch.
Dave?
Yeah, Joey Vandenberg.
Yeah, I think it's a clean sweep for me. I'm intrigued by the potential of Evans, but he's not had quite the impact I hoped. He sort of was really being talked up through City's academy. He's just not quite. But, you know, hopefully that goal on Saturday, well-taken goal, hopefully that gives him a bit of a confidence boost and he can come back.
Just going to go off on a slight tangent. Sorry, Johnny. That goal, how does Joseph Mendes feel about that? He was the one who had the shot that actually went further away. He did a Les Ferdinand, pretty much, didn't he? Had a shot and actually went further away. Lucky enough, it went to George Evans' feet. He had the flick on, and at the far post, there was Joseph Mendes. Didn't put it in. Instead, George Evans did. All right, got out of jail, but...
Nobody's
mentioned that.
No. No, I can't say.
Good striker, isn't he? Good striker. Knows where the goal is.
Absolutely.
Unselfish.
Well, okay, so it's a clean sweep for Joey on that one. Sticking with this sort of tactical theme as well, Stuart says, do you think the lack of goals in open play is a player or a tactic issue? Does the tactic need tweaking, or is it a new striker?
Combination of both.
Yeah.
Players, you've got a square peg in a round hole in Jan Kermigan, I think.
But I suppose the one way to sort of branch this out a little bit is, does Yap need to bend the tactic to more suit the players he's got, to play into the strengths of a Jan Kermigan? Or does he want to, for the long-term benefit of the football club, want to stick with this tactic as much as possible, even if he hasn't quite got all the players to play it?
Well, I think you've got to stick with this tactic so far as you can see it's getting results. I mean, yes, Jan Kermigan isn't necessarily the right man up front at the moment, but you can't argue when... You know, like we said, however we've been getting the results, we've been getting the results. So clearly something is going right, and just because one player is underperforming or doesn't quite fit things, I don't think you should radically change everything.
Could it be that we're already playing
a
different method of a varied style to fit Jan Kermigan? I think there's a potential there for that.
Are we already in the Matrix?
Don't get me started on
Did we take movie. The blue pill?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but I was going to say like pill aware then, but I don't even think such a thing as this. Drugs aware?
We don't need to go down those depths. Gambling's enough of our eyes.
Yeah, we would have alcohol aware and gamble aware. Anyway, moving swiftly on from such vices. Chris Hartley, do you feel Danny Williams' strengths suit Stam's preferred way of playing? Also, how do you see Stam evolving this side as the season progresses? As Saturday showed, he isn't going to rigidly stick to one way of playing if they are losing / not performing well.
I mean,
Danny Williams, Johnny.
I'll start with Danny Williams. I think he suits it perfectly because he is that bundle of energy in the middle, isn't he? And he's got that uncanny dribbling ability where he just seems to keep the ball somehow. I don't really know how he does it because he doesn't look like he's a dribbler, but he certainly manages to keep the ball somehow. And I think he's almost that further forward water carrier, isn't he? He keeps things ticking over, and ultimately he's performing. I think he's performed better now than he has at any point in the last season. In terms of Stam not sticking to one style of play, I actually disagree with that. I think Stam has been slow to react, certainly with substitutions in the last couple of games. I mean, he only brought on Joseph Mendes in the 83rd minute, and you could see, you know, for the previous 20 minutes or so, nothing was happening or things weren't going right. And again, against Brentford, I think he didn't change things up fast enough.
Just to pick you up there, I mean, he did substitute Joey Vandenberg at half time. We were 2-0 down.
But on the other side of things as well, you can say in the game against Huddersfield, he makes two substitutions before the 55th minute, and we completely lose mm-hmm. the plot. So yeah. I think he's still learning manage.
We can happily deduce that, yeah, he's not quite mastered the art of tactical substitution.
Yeah. How dare he after 14 games in charge?
Absolutely.
Yeah. This is. But it is concerning, I think.
Just continuing the Danny Williams theme, though, he is out of contract this summer. How big a player are you making for him to stay? We all know he's, if not the biggest earner, then one of the biggest earners left at the football club. The last of the big Zingarevic contracts. Are you making a real push to keep him at the football club? Or do you think that there's somebody else that they could probably get in to do the same role cheaper?
Latter. Yeah. I genuinely think the latter. I don't think... there was a lot of promise and there was a lot of love for Danny Williams in his first season when he played. He was very often injured. And I thought him and Danny Guthrie in the middle, when they played, had a very effective partnership going. But I'm not seeing any real progression in ability and wherewithal to actually really change the game.
This is his fourth season.
I can believe it.
I can believe it, but it's just fact tells me that it is. But four seasons, but like you're saying, like when he came with a potential, but there comes a point where if a player's not improving, then maybe they didn't have that potential after all.
Exactly. And I'm just seeing that. Having said that, with him in the midfield, my viewpoint, with him, Joey Vandenberg and John Swift, you've got three very different players in there. Danny Williams is very much a sort of drive, get hold of the ball and drive the team on type player. Joey Vandenberg is just a destructive player, picks up the ball and likes to play it fairly simple. Swift adds the culture and class in there. So I see if you want a varied midfield, then you've got that as the fallback,
option.
Options. Joel Devins is a lot more calculated with his approach. I'd still have him in there. I'd still have him as one of the three. The Vandenberg, Williams, Swift trio, I think, is the best we've got at the moment, the most effective we've got. But do we keep him, bearing in mind that he's on a huge contract?
I don't think he turns 28 in March, and I cannot see him taking a discount to play in all likelihood Championship football again next season.
No, he'll probably end up at a mid-table Premier League club as a squad player. You know, we won't get a fee for him unless somebody comes for him in January. That's unlikely.
Would you take it in January? Someone came in with, say, £1 million bid and Williams was prepared to go? Keep him to the end of the season?
We'll see where we are before I make that judgment.
Okay. Fair enough. Moving on to some themes to do with one of our next opponents, Aston Villa, who sacked their manager, Roberto Di Matteo, today. He lasted, 12... league games, only won once. I think they won one, drew seven, lost four, despite spending massive amounts of money on the likes of Aaron Tischbacher and Ross McCormack as well. But Di Matteo biffed, and one Steve Clarke is in temporary charge at the moment. And Ian Phillips says, if Clarke stays at Villa until our match, does the change of manager help, hinder, or not change our chances of beating them? Also, what did the ground ever do to Jan Kermigan? He always seems to be punching it. Theories.
Steve Clarke. Let's start with him. I think it's highly likely if Steve Clarke is in charge that Villa will put one over us. Steve Clarke will be highly pumped up for that. He'll have his players pumped up for it. And I just think if there's one charge while he's in caretaker manager, he'll be having his eyes on that one if they don't appoint a manager before then. Who knows, it might even be him. Historically, we don't have a great record against Villa. I think we've only ever beaten them once, I think. Don't quote me on that. And these things, they tend to just sort of continue. Take a look at our record against Newcastle up at St James's Park. Take a look at our record against Portsmouth. All right, we're beating them on two or three occasions.
It was like how Warnock came when he was in caretaker charge of QPR and got that win.
Yep.
And you just thought, just bloody typical. Johnny Clark's get one over us. For the record, I can't disagree with anything Dave said, really.
Yeah, no, I think he'll be fired up. I mean, I'd actually be a bit... I'd have assumed he'd have gone as well, because I'd have thought that the pair of them would have come as a, you know, a bit of a joint package. Mm. So I'm a bit surprised that he's staying in temporary charge, to be honest. Just if they do go for Dean Smith, who's the Brentford manager, would be a bit ironic, seeing as he had a very similar record when he initially became Brentford manager. Mm. Now you're showing that they're showing that certainly patience is a virtue when it comes to your new managers. So, yeah.
I'd be
surprised if Dean Smith did turn it down if Villa made a formal approach and Brentford accepted it. Let's go through the formalities first. If he was offered the job, I'd be surprised if he did turn it down. Given that allegedly he used to sweep the whole end with his dad. He's a big Villa fan, Dean Smith.
That'd be his third job in the space of two seasons, right? Started at Walsall.
Yeah.
Yeah. As for the ground in Jan Kermigan, I don't know.
I mean, he was very frustrated on Saturday, and I think it seemed to stem mainly from a challenge that Bradley Johnson put in on him, where he kneed him in the back, and ref did very little about it, and it looked a bit dirty to me. And there was actually one moment I thought he went a little bit close to the line with an elbow near Bradley Johnson's face. So I think he was probably frustrated at that. He's probably frustrated at his role in the side. Fans were getting on his back as well.
Yeah, but what did the ground ever do to him, Johnny?
The ground's an easy target. It's not going to fight. Not going to fight back. Well, you'd think not anyway.
He's got that in him though, hasn't he? In all seriousness, we saw it with Riam Rossignol earlier in the season, and we've seen it with Bradley Johnson on Saturday. There's a little bit of naughtiness going into him. He's not averse to dishing it back in fairly blatant manner.
Credit to him, as long as he gets away with it, that's all I care about. And finally, finishing off the mailbag this week, it comes from Jack Simmons. If selling Tischbowler released the funds to buy more, was that the best piece of business we did all summer? This is a really good question, I think, actually. Who would you rather have, Liam Moore or Aaron Tischbowler? Discuss.
I think it's quite funny how opinions of the Tischbowler sale have changed after 3 months. Because he's been in and out of the side of Villa, partly due to injury. I'd rather have Liam Moore right now. He's a proven commodity. And I mean, I didn't rate Aaron Tischbowler, but when you've got a player that young, you never know how they're going to turn out. And as we knew, he was a bit injury prone, and he seems to have carried that through. So, in terms of the best piece of business, absolutely. I think Liam Moore is... Well, I mean, it's going to be an ongoing battle between Moore and Swift, isn't it, for signing of the season, and probably for player of the season as well.
Who'd you rather have, Dave?
Liam Moore. As I said earlier, his effect on the defence has been absolutely phenomenal. Brentford aside, we've only lost once, and we've generally looked very solid in almost all of the games. Tischbowler, he's very young, very raw. I would have liked to have had the opportunity to have seen them both on the same side, actually.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with Tischbowler just maybe sat in where Joey Vandenberg sits right now. I think possibly that was where Yapstam had visions of him sitting. But, you know, we'll never know unless we buy him back.
No, I think if you look at the deal at the moment, Tischbowler plus more than 3.5 million for Tischbowler, not a bad bit of business.
No.
And considering they're both still fairly young,
only 23, I think.
Yeah. And the defence needed more work in the midfield. So, yeah, I think it could very well be the best bit of business we did all summer. Mm. Right, anyway, that wraps up the mailbag. Thank you to all of you who've sent in your questions and feedback to @thetarlestend on Twitter, thetarlestend@gmail.com for your emails, and facebook.com/thetarlestend. All very much appreciated. Keep them coming in. We'll discuss it, our show plans. But it doesn't matter when you send it in. It can be week before the show, day before the show. It all counts, all gets in that mailbag. So thank you very much. And without further ado, let's wrap up this show with some Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business?
Right, just time for some any other business. Now, we're not going to do our usual in-depth preview of the next few games. It's 2 weeks, and a lot can happen over these international breaks. I say a lot can happen. Usually it feels like a really painful, long process. I'm not even going to delve into the Big Sam issue.
Are we not in the EFL trophy action?
Possibly. I'm not counting that.
Okay.
I'm not counting that at all. Just as I'm not prepared to discuss the England manager situation, I'm going to steer clear of that. But anyway, in terms of a full senior Reading side, no outing for 2 weeks. When we come back, it will be a trip to Loftus Road, take on QPR. Then Villa come on the Tuesday night, as mentioned. And then we go to New York to face Rotherham. So there we go. Just generally, though, as I said, I don't want to delve into too many predictions or anything like that. But out of those three games, you're sitting here right now as a target. If you're Yapstam, you're setting that three-game target. What would be your minimum points prediction from those three games that you'd be happy with?
Pessimistic, optimistic, or realistic?
Well, I think you go in the middle. You go realistic. You say, this is what we want from those three games. Obviously, you want 9 points.
5 points.
Five. Johnny?
1 win, 2 draws.
4.
Realistically, I think you're looking at a point from QPR. That's not unachievable. A point at home to Villa. That's not unachievable. You've got to look to beat Rotherham away.
100% got to beat Rotherham. I still think you look to win one of those two games. I think you really target 6 points because I think both of those teams are there for the taking, especially QPR. So I would say 6 points you want from that. But yeah, if they end up with 5 or even 4, it's not the end of the
world. Realistic minimum target, 5 points.
Yeah.
Remain unbeaten.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is just about it. Just a quick update in the Prediction League standings for those following at home. It is one of our closest races ever. There is 1 point between all 5 of us. There is a 3 at the top at the moment with myself, Charles and Johnny, all on 7 points. Johnny having a good game.
My trademark pessimism coming up trumps
again. He has, yeah. He's finally... And Westy and Handbags are 1 point behind on 6. So I'll get your thoughts, gents, on the predictions for these games a little closer to time because injuries and things can happen. So we'll wait for that. But that just about wraps up the show for this week. Again, thank you to everyone who's taken part in the crowdfunding campaign. As for when we're going to be back, it's going to be no show next week because we're not going to have anything to talk about unless Yapstam leaves to take over someone else.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that.
That'll be about the only thing that can get us into a show. Yeah. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time, and hopefully I'll be back with Charles for a podcast extra as well. In the meantime, please do head over to thetalhurstend.com. There's lots of great content. Just because it's international break doesn't mean we're taking a break from writing. Lots of bits and pieces. You can head up there already. Lots of interesting little bits and bobs as well at the moment. You can go read Hunty, our regular columnist. He caught up with Trevor Senior, former Reading striker, so good to get some of his recollections up on there. We had an update on Reading's women's team as well. They're battling out for survival in the top tier, so you can find out how their season's gone so far. And lots of other great bits and pieces. As mentioned, you can check out those player ratings and match reports, and we'll have lots of other goodies coming up on thetalhurstend.com as well. So please stay tuned to the website. In the meantime, gents, thanks very much for joining me, as always.
No worries.
And my check's in the post, is it?
Oh, I must have your old address though, so you know, If it doesn't arrive,
return to sender.
Why.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Right. Anyway, that is us. We are done. In the meantime, all that's left to be said is, come on, you bars.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.